From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon for Thursday, August 31st, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunavchishawa, for sharing in conversation today. On the show, Science and Secrets of Visceral, a talk from the State Museum Conservator Ellen Carley happening tomorrow. Juno Arts and Humanities First Friday Roundup, Kindred's post-anniversary celebration with new art and design from Chloe Cavanaugh, and the Alaska Writers Guild is having their annual conference. We'll get all the details. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikach. Gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A lecture is happening tomorrow as part of a program series accompanying Visceral, Verity, Legacy, Identity, a group of three interrelated exhibitions that explore contemporary and historical Alaska Native issues, spotlighting GUT as a conduit for Indigenous voices, which continues through October 9th. The talk, Science and Secrets of Visceral, is happening Friday, that's tomorrow, September 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the APK Lecture Hall. Joining me to chat about it are museum conservator and lecturer tomorrow, Ellen Carley, and Jackie Manning, curator of exhibitions from the State Museums, Archives, Library, Archives, and Museums. The long name that we just like to call the museum, which is nice. Gunavchish, for being here. How are you?
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Boston.
Of course. It's really nice to have you here. Now, this exhibit I know has been going all summer long. It actually started back like in April, I think it was.
We had some programming back in April. The first part of the exhibit opened back in April with Sonia Keller Combs' solo show. One of the galleries here opened back then.
Yeah. And there was another section that opened in May. And then, so it's like three different parts of this exhibit.
Yes.
And it's been running all summer. We only have about another month or so to go check it out, right? And then this, we'll get to the talk, but let's just talk about what is the exhibit at first. What is that? What is the exhibit?
Well, it's a very unique exhibit in that we have artist Sonia Keller Combs that we brought, so one of the shows, Visceral Verity, is her work. So it's a solo show of her work. And then she also helped co-curate the other two exhibits. And they're based, one, the next room over, Visceral Legacy, is she takes ideas from her solo exhibition and she curated from the collection. And then the last gallery, Visceral Identity, has a display of multiple parkas from different regions of Alaska. And it's the third part of this Visceral trilogy of exhibits.
Okay. Awesome. That is so cool. And so this lecture talk, right? The lecture sounds so formal, Ellen.
And it will be informal because I will just be chatty.
Just be chatty about it. And it's sort of like lessons from this exhibit that we've learned over these months or just in general. Because we're not going to have the people who created the exhibit, but it's you as the conservator, which I want to get to what that is too. But like you're going to be telling us about sort of the different things we've learned from this exhibit?
Yes, yes. So basically, these are the things that we couldn't fit in the exhibit labels and we couldn't cram into the catalog. These are all the kind of revelations and relationships and insights that we've gotten over studying this material and working together. It's a material I've been obsessed with for about 15 years. So there's still so much we wanted to share about it that we didn't have an opportunity to do that in the label textile catalog.
I see. Okay. So Jackie, I know you're the curator of exhibitions, which I think most people understand what a curator is, right?
Well, you know, and I should say Ellen is the co-curator. She is the conservator at the Alaska State Museum, but she's the co-curator along with Sonia of this exhibit.
Oh, okay.
So so the two of them worked together, looked at the collection and identified what would go out and how it would be displayed. So Sonia saw it very much as her artistic vision of these installations of different objects made from gut being put out and stories being told through them. And Ellen knew the collection. She knows the collection very well, and specifically, you know, all the items that are made from gut. And to be able to display some of these items that were traditionally maybe stored rolled up, she had to do a lot of work to take parkas and be able to humidify them and get them ready for display. And in doing that, she did all this research on, you know, what species they're made from. So it's a very exciting tomorrow's talk, I think, is going to be a very exciting in-depth sort of look at this material.
Oh, that's awesome. So Ellen, co-curator of this exhibit, and then conservator is your regular gig. What is a conservator? What is it that you do on the daily?
Yeah, this is a great question. And we do get this about, you know, what's a curator? What's a conservator? Yeah. How do museums operate? Like, how are these practices done behind the scenes, which is what we'll get into in the exhibit. But a conservator is someone who's supposed to know what things are made out of materially, chemically, and what causes them to deteriorate over time and how we can preserve those materials for as long as we can. So when I trained to do this 25 years ago, the idea was that you would know what everything was made out of and you would try to preserve it for, you know, 200 years, 500 years. So you learned chemistry, you learned art history, maybe anthropology, and you learned studio art, sort of hand skills. And so we used to kind of describe that as our authority to be treating these things, right? But now the newer way that museums are thinking about this is more like care and repair, not just care and repair of the things in the collections, but the relationships between people and the stuff in the collections. Because the only way we keep this stuff, the only reason we keep this stuff is it's important to people. And who is it the most important to are the folks in the source communities that make these things. So cultivating those relationships and those collaborations is sort of what museum practices heading towards now.
I see. Okay. And I know that the museum, you have a large collection of stuff. Much of it is out on the floor in the different areas and rooms, but there's also stuff that we haven't seen or that is stored away. And that is that part of it too, is like preserving that stuff so that when it does want to come up, like I think Jackie was saying, there were certain things that you decided what's going to be pulled from the collection that will be put on display. And you had to do some work on these pieces to make them, to get them ready to be displayed?
Yes. So gut, or the inner organs of animals and people, but we don't have any of that on exhibit. Inner organs of animals.
Not yet.
Not yet, right? But it's not leather. It's not the skin on the outside of the body. It was living tissues and membranes on the inside of the body. And it behaves and works in ways that is very unusual for what we're used to, right? It was the Gore-Tex of the day. Mm. It was the plastic of the day. And so it's in museum storage because a lot of people don't understand this material and how it works and how to put it on exhibit. So the vast majority of the things that are on exhibit have never been out before, have never been on exhibit before. We have, right now in the Alaska State Museum, 24 gut parkas on display. And I would put down money, that's more than have ever been on exhibit in any museum on the planet.
Wow.
Ever. Of all the gut parkas in museum collections, which there are all over the world, most of them Alaskan gut parkas, more than half of them are not attributed as to culture. A lot of them just say they're Alaskan gut parkas or they're Arctic gut parkas. Mm. So some of the work that we've done is to reunite them with their cultural identity and to explore how we can put them on exhibit and share them publicly. And kind of the hopes that this will help things come out of museum collections everywhere that hasn't been seen.
So is there like a distinct obviously, there's a distinct difference between what's on the outside of the animal and what's on the inside. Mm-hmm. So is there, what have we learned about the process of working with gut? I know you're going to share some of this tomorrow, but
yeah.
What's different about working with gut than with the sort of outside of the animal?
Well, for one thing, the intestinal material behaves like Gore-Tex. It's vapor permeable, but not liquid water permeable. So often it was used as rain gear, containers for water, windows, sails, things like that, which is a pretty remarkable property. Although there are some gut parkas, these amazing ones that are white, and we'd always heard that they were not waterproof. Well, the truth is they are waterproof, but the white finish isn't, because they're made by freeze drying. And when you get them wet, they turn translucent again. And a lot of us in the museum field didn't understand how that worked. But because marine mammals are protected, we didn't have access to those materials to test why that is. We happened to remember during pandemic, we had so many bears. Mm. Fish and Game had to euthanize a black bear here in town. And folks helped us get a hold of a black bear. And we were able to process those intestines and do both of the technologies, the techniques, the processes, and compare them. And I think we understand now better some of those ways that this material behaves, which can then help us in museums everywhere take care of the material better.
That's fascinating. And is there sort of historical context too? I mean, obviously, you know, tools and machinery and different chemicals that can be used now maybe didn't exist, you know, thousands of years ago. But the process was so useful to be able to use all of the animal, right? Like, that's a big part of it, was don't let anything go to waste. We're going to use all of it and to create these things. And do we know, like, how folks did that? Like, in terms of what tools were they using, or how did they preserve it? Or, I mean, you're talking about the intestines and, like, the Gore-Tex material. It's fascinating to think about, like, how you would take that and use it for, you know, rain gear and such like that.
Yes. And, you know, when I started looking into this material years ago, I was like, how did they make this? How did this work? Yeah. And I didn't have time to do it at work. So I did a PhD.
I didn't have time to work, so I just went to school and got a doctorate.
And the things that I learned, I mean, it's a life-changing thing to go to, you know, I went to Scammon Bay and studied with folks there. They processed beluga whale and bearded seal, and they showed me how they did it. Sven Hawkinson from Kodiak, he processes brown bear. He showed me that. He teaches that at the Burke Museum at the University of Seattle, actually. So seeing these technologies and how they do it is amazing. It's really spectacular.
Oh, that is really cool. Now, tomorrow's talk, I know, is free, right, to attend.
Yes.
And is because it's first Friday from 4:30 to 7, is admission to the museum free?
It's free, yes.
Okay.
First Friday is always free from 4:30 to 7. And Ellen's talk is going to begin at 6:30 in the lecture hall.
Okay. So you got to sneak in there,
yes.
See the exhibit. Like, might as well go after work, go see the exhibit, and
absolutely.
Then, you know, listen to Ellen's talk, right? And learn all about this stuff. And, like, why is this exhibit important? I mean, it's ran for many months now. And by the time it's done, that'll be six months or so, right? Six, April, I can't count right now, but it's a lot of months. Why is it important, and why is it important to have it up for so long?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I think is really important is the co-curation with Sonia Kelleher-Combs, who, if you've seen her exhibit, she's exploring through gut and through materials and through art the difficult enormity of painful experiences with 35 communities that have credible accounts and reports of abuse by the Catholic Church.
Mm.
And as you can imagine, that's a very heavy topic to get into. And the museum is not qualified to get into that. When I was doing my PhD work, it became obvious to me that gut is also a spiritual material. But I was like, I am over my head.
Mm.
So for Sonia to come in and with her sophistication and understanding of these issues, and then not only do her own exhibit, but go in our collection and say, I want these 100 items to tell these stories in this way was powerful. And then for her to ask us to do things, I want a crowd of gut parkas suspended from the ceiling and moving. I want light shown through these gut windows. I want this vessel not to be repaired, but I want there to be plastic rosary spilling from the wound in the container. For her to come in and ask us to do those things, it's nothing that museums could do without that kind of collaboration. And so I feel like this indigenous authority in the way museums' collections are used and presented is really important.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that I love, which is sort of telling a story through the work, right? In terms of this, you know, and I love that she had designs on how it would look and shining light through things and figuring a lot of that. And all that tells a story, which I think is fascinating. So who should attend tomorrow?
I think anyone, adults, children, nerdy science types, poets, artists, people who are fascinated with animals. I'm going to tell you some mind-blowing stuff about crested auklets, for example. It involves tangerines. It involves cuddling scrums.
I love it. There's so many cool details. So and so it is good for younger kids to come and maybe not like a 5-year-old. They might get a little squirmy, but like maybe the 10 or 12, like, right?
In absolutely.
Terms of that, if they're into science and they're in that kind of thing and
absolutely.
Looking into guts and animals and all that good stuff, right? And how it's used and how it's used for good. Because this stuff, like you mentioned, was used to make all kinds of things. And I love the reference to sort of putting it in the modern, like it's like the Gore-Tex, you know, it's that kind of material and it's so strong. So that's great. And remind us again, Jackie, of when the exhibit runs through and anything else that we need to know about the museum today.
So the exhibit will run through October 9th, and I am just going to take a minute to let you know that we have closing weekend events. Sonia Keller Combs will be back in town for the closing weekend and that final First Friday, as well as artist Maureen Grubin, who's going to give a youth activity for us on making ptarmigan crop ornaments. So that's going to be pretty exciting. But tomorrow, First Friday, 4:30 to 7 p.m., free entry into the museum, and Ellen's talk will start at 6:30 p.m.
That's awesome. Ellen, break a leg tomorrow on the talk. And Jackie, thanks for coming and giving us all the details. You all do an amazing job over there. And this exhibit, go out and see it. It runs through October 9th. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Poston.
Gonna cheesh. Up next, it's another month and another First Friday roundup with Phil from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. We'll be right back here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clene Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who travel to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gwyneth Cheesh to Vera Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Well, every month, First Friday is awesome, and the First Friday Roundup is always a good time. Joining me again is Phil Hipshin, Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Kunathchish, Phil, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
How was the farmer's market?
Oh my gosh.
Food
the farmer's
fest.
Market, food fest. It was the first one I had been to, and it was amazing. I spent way too much money.
Because there were like arts and crafts and food.
Yeah,
and all
there
kinds
was
of things,
a
right?
lot there. Yeah. So thank you to everyone who came. Thank you to all the vendors, all the artists, all the food producers, and whatever you want to call them, whatever you call yourself. Like, thank you for being there. It was great.
Absolutely.
Was great. Yeah.
And now we're hitting September, which means fall season is here. There's all kinds of things happening coming up. So tell us what's going on. I know there's some First Friday events and all kinds of things. What do you got?
Oh my gosh, I have so much. I have so much for you. Let's start with First Friday.
Let's
because
do that.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in Juno. I'm going to just go over a couple things. At the Arts and Humanities Council, we have alternative, fired ceramics. And that starts tomorrow at 4:00. They're actually working on setting it up right now. And it was all looking really, really cool. So it's a group show featuring ceramics created with alternative firing methods, which I don't know a whole lot about. So I'm intrigued to learn more. Artists are David Riccio, Joyce Payne, Doris Alcorn, and Luis Kunstada. It all looks really cool. You know, I've talked about this before on here. I love ceramics. I think they're so great to look at. So it'll be really cool to see lesser known modes of production in that practice. So come check it out. That show will be up through September. Like I said, opening is tomorrow at 4:00 for First Friday at the Arts and Culture Center. As always, just so I don't forget to mention this, it's always free parking outside of the Jack on First Friday.
Okay,
so
great.
Park there. Start off with us.
And then you can walk
and
all over.
And then launch off.
Yeah.
It's a great little setup. We also have an Awk Rock First Friday listening day tomorrow as well. And that is at the Grizz Bar starting at 4 p.m. So keep your fingers crossed for good weather. So we're going to be at the Grizz Bar playing Awk Rock music, selling tickets, festival passes, day passes for Awk Rock will be opening up tomorrow. So if you've had your eye on the lineup on one specific day, this is a really great opportunity to purchase those. And like I said, there's going to be music playing. There's a number of businesses throughout Juno participating in this as well. So if you hear music at Alaska Robotics, Amalga, Copa, Barnaby, Devil's Club, and Forbidden Peak, that is the Awk Rock listening list. And you are experiencing a little bit of what's going to be at the festival.
That's awesome because that is everybody's getting in the mood, right? Everybody's ready for this to happen. It's coming up like 3 or 4 weeks away.
It's right around the corner. My schedule has been inundated with daily meetings. So it's going to be really, really cool. We're really excited about it. And this will be a really good first peak opportunity for
absolutely
a lot of
and just I just want to plug a programming note for the show. Next Tuesday we're going to re-air the hour-long preview where we played a lot of the music with the leadership Kachung and Nefka to look at some of the artists that are coming here. So we'll be re-airing that episode next Tuesday here on Juno Afternoon as well. I love that everybody around town's playing the music at their events.
It's really cool. We've gotten a lot of community support for Awk Rock and everyone's really all in on this. So we're really looking forward to a really great festival and a really cool evening tomorrow.
I mean, we have to be proud of the fact that we basically have the only Indigenous music festival in the United States, and it's here in Juno.
Not even basically, like that's the reality. There is no other Indigenous music festival in the United States, and we're really excited to be partnering with Clinkin Haida in executing all this.
Absolutely.
We're really excited. Yeah. I got more though.
Yes.
Sea Alaska at the Sea Alaska Arts Campus, they're doing a really cool little mini market, it sounds like. So they have a number of artists that are going to be there selling, which I'm always excited by. So if you don't just want to look at art, you want to buy it too, check them out. Renee Culp is going to be there, Ayana James with some prints and paintings and formline design, I believe, too. Mario Fulmer is going to have some fur wearables and beadwork. Ray Mills, woven and beaded jewelry, and also Sydney Johnson. So definitely stop by there. It's always worth with it. Northwind Architects, they are having an exhibit by Paige Bridges opening at 5 tomorrow. Excuse me. She's a really cool abstract impressionist who I just learned was from New York originally. And I was looking at some of her paintings earlier today, and they're very interesting, very fun. And her work is focusing on a new theme for her, which is outer space, which I'm also excited about because my vibe. So check them out. I don't usually see their names on the First Friday roster, so I'm really excited and anticipating what's going to likely be a really cool show at Northwind Architects. And they're at 126 Seward Street, if anyone is unfamiliar.
Yeah, they're right next to Annie Kale's. I believe. And the plant shop, the plant store.
The plant store that my sister goes to way too much.
Yeah.
But it's great.
Talk about spending money. That's a good one. I like that place.
We also have, and I was actually just talking with Chloe out in the lobby. She's going to talk about this in a minute, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But it's Kindred Post's birthday. She has a really cool collection she's releasing with them. So check them out as well. And I'll let her talk about that later. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see.
Yeah, what else?
What else? I mean, I could talk about Ock Rock. That's really the big one for me right now.
That's a big event for September. I know we're going to have some folks back on in a couple weeks for that, but give us a little extra. Yeah.
So, if you have been eyeing tickets and you just haven't really fully committed for whatever reason, now is a really good time to look more into that. We still have festival passes available. For $150, so that's $50 a day roughly. But then we're going to be releasing day passes starting tomorrow as well for $75 per day. So check out the lineup. That's all available at ockrockfest.com, so you can kind of pick and choose what you're really interested in. And then we are also still actively recruiting volunteers. So if you want to help out, we have ample opportunity for everyone to do that. That's all on our website as well. You can sign up for a day for specific shifts, or for the full festival. And in return for your hard work and support, we are very happy to compensate those volunteers with full festival passes.
There you go.
So that's a great way to get into. And Absolutely. We have so many different areas of need in day of execution of that event. So fill out the form. We'll reach out to you and we can take it from there.
And the form's on the jahc.org.
Go to aakrockfest.com. So that's aakwrockfest.com. And there's a little volunteer.
A volunteer form on that website. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Phil, for coming in. As always, you can go to jahc.org/first-Friday. There's always usually a little button on their front page, too, that'll take you there. Tons of events at the Jack always. Phil, you're doing an amazing job. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, one last note.
Yeah.
We are closed on Labor Day, Monday.
Closed on Labor Day.
I was asked to air that out. I forgot it was a holiday.
No gallery, no nothing. You're giving the folks a day off,
which is, and
you get one yourself. That's well deserved. Thanks for coming in. Gunashish,
thank you.
Up next, Kindred Post, First Friday and Anniversary Celebration with artwork by Chloe Cavanaugh. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a sunny day in late May 2022, a small plane flies over the green expanse of Nelson Island in the Bering Sea west of Bethel. The plane is methodically crisscrossing the island, taking pictures. Dark clusters of muskox stand out against the landscape. This aerial survey of Nelson Island will help wildlife biologists determine the population of muskox on the island. Musk ox were introduced to Nelson Island in the late 1960s when 23 animals were transferred from nearby Nunavak Island. Ideal forage conditions and a lack of natural predators allowed the musk ox to thrive. By 2009, the population had grown to 541 musk ox. Wildlife managers estimated that the ideal number of musk ox for Nelson Island was between 250 and 450 animals. But the population kept growing, and by 2013 was more than 1,000. Worried that overcrowding, overgrazing, and habitat destruction would lead to a population crash, biologists allowed hunters to harvest more animals. That 2022 survey, biologists tallied 513 muskox, slightly above the population objective. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kindred Post is having a First Friday celebration, and this month they're also celebrating their 9th anniversary. And the artist this month that is going to be there on First Friday is Chloe Cavanaugh, who will be on hand to share her designs and artwork for the apparel collection, something that Kindred Post does every year, but it's always especially nice to do it on their 9th anniversary. So, Chloe Gunath-Cheesh, for joining me here in the studio today.
Gunath-Cheesh, happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so great to have you in the studio. I want to find out a little bit about you. Can you share a little bit about your artwork and what kind of work you do?
Yeah, so I started my business, Black White Raven Company, gosh, back in 2020, and kind of just started off digitizing my grandfather's designs. He had a bunch of old carving templates, and I was working through all these carving templates and just trying to digitize them, and found my love for graphic art, and found that it was a great way to grieve and process and also celebrate the parts of the community that I love so much.
Oh, that's so awesome. So it's something that comes out maybe of a little bit of sadness, but then becomes joy.
Yeah.
To sort of share in that. And there's like, seems like there would always be kind of a feeling of history there and memory.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a lot of it is pulling from people that have had great influence in my life, or, you know, my wishes for the community when I was a youth. So it's almost every time I develop a piece, it's like something from someone I loved or something from my youth coming forward, and kind of this back and forth between that.
Oh, that is so cool. And you have, I mean, starting a business in the middle of the pandemic, right? How was that?
I mean, you know, it definitely gave me something to do. Graphic art, it gave me a lot of time in front of the computer. And, you know, it really was an opportunity to find ways to work within community. You know, we were all feeling it during the pandemic, whether it was socially, financially, just the impact. So it was kind of great to be able to start off my business being able to work with a lot of community members. We ended up being able to pay fees for the kids in CAKE. So they got to go to open gym for free. We got to send basketballs and different things over there. So it was really a time to build a business with care and community in mind.
Wow. That's really great. And it seems like it's going pretty well. You seem extremely busy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always running around. You'll see me with a coffee in hand. And, you know, Juno's such a small and supportive community that I just feel like once you kind of get in that knit with other artists, we're always uplifting each other. We're always working together. And that's where that community aspect is.
And I love the sort of the pop-up shops that happen. Some they're happening like in people's homes. And it's just like a group of artists getting together and saying, we're going to get together and have a little pop-up shop. You want to stop by and pick up some swag and some gear, do it.
Oh yeah. It's amazing. And it's, you know, a time to geek out on your favorite shops and be in your friend's home. Clinkit Aesthetics is one of my favorite businesses. So when we got to be in Corinne's home and do those pop-ups, it was just a blast.
Yeah. I love that shirt. I have one of your shirts too. I love that shirt. The design of your company is awesome. But we're also here to talk about Kindred Post and the commission that you have with them. So how did that come about?
So, I mean, my history with Kindred Post goes back to when I was 18 years old. Mm. And I remember walking into Kindred Post and it was just bare, and Christy being like, all right, it's going to be here, then we're going to do shelves here, and this is kind of what it's going to look like. And every summer I'd come back home, I'd see kind of Kindred Post grow, and it stayed close to my heart. They're one of the first businesses to support my business, and we're selling my stickers and just have been an amazing support So Christy reached out to me and asked if I would do the 9th anniversary design. And you feel the weight of some pressure there when it's something that's so close to your heart and special, and you want to do such a good job. And when I was thinking about this design, I started to think about, I gifted Christy the first year she opened Kindred Post. It was old corners of envelopes and stamps from my great-grandparents' letters. And I shaped it in this frame. And, you know, it was kind of this little bit of a thinking of the future of Kindred Post and thinking about these past letters from my family and kind of that connection that we have to this post office where community happens. And that's kind of what I put into that design, of thinking of the letters our ancestors sent, the messages they leave on this land, and with knowledge and words and kindness and through us. I wanted to carry that. It's through the land, it's through the animals, it's through us, it's through kindness. And yeah, that, I hope that comes through with the design.
That's awesome. And I know that they're turning 9,
yeah,
which is amazing. What's important about their support of local artists and makers of jewelry and more? Because they've really also sort of blown up with that. Like, they're, it seems like they're very supportive of local artwork and local artists. And what's important about that?
You know, I think that's what makes Juno so special, is having those spaces where it's not only a place you walk into Kindred Post and you see all these artists and you see people you know or have the potential to know, of local communities, small businesses, and their personalities shine through. And Kindred Post has been really great about creating this space where there are artists who care, and there are artists who have a message, and there are artists that are invested in this community, and they've given space for artists to highlight that work, where it can be really difficult as an artist to find a space that's consistent, that isn't just once a month, but is year round. You have an opportunity to kind of see these artists' growth and what they're creating.
That's awesome. Now, there's going to be what is going to be available? It's like t-shirts and sweatshirts and things like that?
Yeah. So we'll have a t-shirt available, a hoodie, and a crew neck available. And we had some amazing models for the photo shoot. You can hop onto Kindred Post and see some of the photos. Daniel Furman, Jamie Ann, and of course, I always force my little brother to be a model too.
Well, that's great. And I know the event is tomorrow. It's Friday, September 1st from 4:30 to 7 during First Friday. And they also make a note that mail services are not available during this time because they're going to be too busy celebrating and looking at this great artwork that is going to be available from Chloe Cavanaugh. And Chloe, what other projects do you have coming up? What are we looking out for you next?
You know, September 21st through the 23rd, I've been the marketing and design manager for OkRock. So keep an eye out. It has been amazing. You know, it's just an amazing time to support Indigenous artists. We're bringing people from all over the world to be celebrated and to share that with the community. And gosh, what else do I have in the works? You know, stay tuned.
Well, you always have new designs coming up. Where's the best place to follow? You're really good at the socials. Like, put those out there. Let us know where what the socials are for you.
So I am on Instagram, and I have a website at Black and White Raven Company. I'm always doing logos, websites, figuring out how I can collaborate with different businesses, social media strategy. I love to see our small businesses thriving, so that's what I like to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's Chloe Cavanaugh who will be there tomorrow. You're going to be on hand to celebrate and to feature some of these designs that are on these t-shirts. And you can go to kindredpost.com and see some of the modeling of that. It's probably on their socials as well. Just search Kindred Post. It's such a great organization, how strongly they support local artists and makers of jewelry and artwork and so many other things. Yeah. And so let's celebrate them tomorrow. And Chloe Cavanaugh, thank you so much. And best wishes for all of the future for Black and White Raven Company.
I appreciate it. Gunath
Jeesh. Yeah, Gunath Jeesh. Up next, the Alaska Writers Guild annual conference is happening at the end of next month in Anchorage. We'll have a preview next here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Thank you. Let's have a store party. This is Steve Kosas with the Reject Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the moon Enceladus of Saturn. Saturn currently holds the record for the most moons of any of the planets. The count is 145 moons orbiting around Saturn. The second record holder is Jupiter, that currently has a count of 92 moons. That compares to our planet Earth has one moon. Now, most of these moons that orbit Jupiter and Saturn are quite small. And the one I wanted to talk about is the moon Enceladus of Saturn. It's 300 miles in diameter. It's surrounded by an icy crust. Beneath that icy crust is a subsurface ocean of liquid water that's larger in volume than all the oceans of the planet Earth. Now, the reason that there's water so far away from the sun is that the tidal forces of Saturn are great enough to create stress and strain and friction in the interior of Enceladus, which is a high enough heat for liquid water to form. Additionally, plumes are emitted from the cracks in the surface of Enceladus. Those plumes have been seen to erupt up to 10,000 miles above the surface of Enceladus. And when these plumes are analyzed by spectroscopy, they are seen to contain the six elements essential to life as we know it: carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. There are missions that have been sent to analyze this ocean water beneath the surface of Enceladus to see if life exists there other than life on Earth. This is Steve Kosas with Redirect Planetarium. Our public shows are on our schedule on the website at redirectplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little of the Hallucination with Electric Powwow Drum, one of the lead groups coming to the Auk Rock Festival the third week of September here in Juno. My next guest is from the Alaska Writers Guild. The mission of the Writers Guild is to support published and unpublished writers at all levels in the state of Alaska. They have regular meetings at various locations around Alaska and also hold an annual writers conference. That's going to be the last week of September. So you can go to Auk Rock and then you can go up for the festival, the conference, which is up in Anchorage. That will be a conference for writers and illustrators, and it's going to take place on Friday and Saturday, September 29th and 30th. And here to share with us is Brooke Hartman. Welcome, Brooke. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
Awesome. Absolutely. So I want to start with, what is the Alaska Writers Guild? I know I gave a little brief situation there, but what do you all do, and what are the services that you provide everybody?
Yeah, and I think our mission statement says it pretty clearly, but basically we're a very small nonprofit organization with a big reach across the state to support writers and authors at all stages of their writing and publishing career, whether you haven't written anything but you're thinking about it, all the way to you've written several novels and now what? So we offer monthly programs, many of which are free. I would say actually most of which are free. They are kind of a mishmash of either in-person. Currently our in-person programs are in Anchorage, Wasilla, and Fairbanks. And then we also alternate with online programs so that anybody in the state or elsewhere can join in and learn whatever offerings we have on the plate for that month. And then we usually do a couple of workshops in there as well. And then, of course, we have our upcoming conference. So
awesome. So those who aren't necessarily in those areas where I know there's a monthly meeting, are some of the workshops and things you do, are those available via Zoom or different ways like
yes.
that? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. We tend to do every other program or so online. And all of our programs can be found on our website, alaskawritersguild.com. And we also post them on our Facebook page and our Instagram, which is also Alaska Writers Guild. So definitely take a look on those platforms to see what we've got coming up. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, and then we send that out on a regular basis, and that gives you an idea of what we've got on the program.
Awesome. And I know you said that you support and serve folks and writers at all different levels. So if mm-hmm. somebody is a little afraid, like they've got like a little something they want to share, or, you know, they think about writing, what's the best way to, you know, continue that or get involved with the guild? Or, you know, I'm just, you know, I know there's people out there who have it inside them, but they haven't started yet. Right.
And right. So, and that's the nice thing with the Writers Guild is that it kind of is just, you can baby step it. So if there's maybe an online program and it's about plotting your next book, then maybe you want to join into that and just take a backseat, listen, and kind of get an idea of where you want to go next. Or if you want to jump in with both feet, or you're ready, you've done all the programs, you've done all the writing, and you want to see what's next for you, then maybe some other programs or our conference, which offers really a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So who should think about attending the annual conference?
The nice thing about a conference, our conference specifically, is that it is a two-day event. Saturday, the 30th of September, is really the main event. So we have 16 hour-long breakout sessions that you can choose from throughout the day. So some of those occur all at the same time, and then you choose which one you want in that kind of time block. We also have panel sessions with various national faculty, editors, and agents. We have keynote speakers. This year, our keynote is literary agent Eric Smith, who is very popular on social media, if people are kind of into the literary community on social media. And then we also offer roundtable first pages reviews on Friday. So if you kind of got something that you're starting out and you're like, I don't know how this is going, I'd really like somebody else to take a look at it, then that would be a good opportunity for that. And also some longer workshops, 2 to 3 hour workshops on Friday as well. So if you want a little bit more of a deeper dive into some specific topic, whether it's how to query agents and editors, to how to plot something, how to do marketing for your book or for yourself as an author, then we try to have, as I said, a little bit of everything for everybody.
Right, because I know some people think of writing as, you know, this big thing, like it's a novel or nothing, right? But that's not necessarily the case, right? I mean, there's short story, all kinds of forms. So are there workshops for those different kind of areas as well, poetry and all that?
There are. We have John Messick, who is an essayist. He's going to be one of our conference speakers this year. And then we have several different genre novelists and agents and editors that are going to be there as well. So if you write romance, or if you write science fiction, or if you write young adult or middle grade, there's going to be a lot of options for you as well. I personally am a picture book author, and we have a picture book editor who's going to be there. So again, just kind of a little bit for everybody. And then as far as, you know, what kind of writing is out there, the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is, so you finished maybe a big novel or a not so big novel, but it's done. And you're like, what do I do next? That's the big question, right? So a lot of people, they sit kind of in their dark basement or in their coffee shop, and they pound out these novels, and they're like, yay, it's done. And then they're like, well, now what do I do? And that is really one of those things that joining an organization like this and attending the meetings, or the workshops, the programs, and especially the conference can kind of answer for you over time, because there are multiple ways these days to get yourself out there and to be published. And which direction is right for you involves a lot of homework, but hopefully some of those questions can be answered in these kind of educational settings.
It's nice because it kind of goes from, you know, potentially being like a hobby to something that maybe you can publish, right? And I know you have some self-publishing workshops. I also love some of the names of these. Jessica Snyder's workshop, Swipe Right, which is W-R-I-T-E instead, How to Match with Your Perfect Editor. And then John Messick, who you mentioned, Writing Place as an Act of Witness. Just some great titles for some of these workshops. You know, Tricky Situations in Publishing, Crafting Characters with Depth and Dimension. It seems like there is a little something, and those are different breakouts and things like that. And then, like you mentioned, you also have keynotes and all kinds of things. You're jamming a lot into 2 days.
We try. And the other thing with the Writers Guild is that we know that for the most part, authors are not rich people. So at least I'm not, and none of the people that I know are. So maybe you are, maybe you're the secret, like J.K. Rowling in the Alaska closet. But we try to keep everything fairly inexpensive. So again, like our programs, most of them are free. If we do charge something for a workshop, that's online during the year, it's usually like $10 or $15. And then our conference, the base price for Saturday is $175 right now for members, which you're like, whoa, $175. But if you looked at any other conference in the lower 48 that offers the breadth and scope of what we offer, it would be well over $300, if not more.
Wow.
And then you would have to travel a lot farther for some of those, which those are great too. I've been to quite a few national conferences, and really getting yourself out there as a writer is a great way to eventually get published. But a good place to start is locally within the state.
Right on. Should writers from Southeast attend the conference?
I would say if your goal is to publish something, if you are passionate as a writer and you really want to move to that next step, whatever it is, whether it's finishing your novel, whether it's taking your completed novel and publishing it in some way, shape, or form, or whether it's I've published something and now I'm not quite sure why it's not selling, or how do I improve my social media platform or my website to get more visitors, or how do I write the sequel, then a conference or a writing organization is something that I think is essential. Now, whether or not you choose to join our organization, I mean, I'm biased. I think we have a really fantastic organization, but there are a lot of other organizations out there across the nation. So if you would rather fly down to Seattle all the time. There are a plethora of fantastic writing organizations and conferences in the Pacific Northwest as well. So,
and I'm wondering, we have a lot of different authors who come through and also live here in Juneau. Are there any meetings in Southeast anywhere, or plans to have sort of a chapter down here?
We would love to have a chapter in Juneau. So if you are listening and you are in Southeast Alaska and you would love to start a local chapter, then definitely reach out to us, especially if there are more than one of you and you're like, we want to start something down here, then we would love to help you do that and get the word out across our Alaska Writers Guild platform and newsletter outreach. So definitely reach out.
That would be great. That would be really awesome. Yeah, if you're listening out there and have a group, Alaska Writers Guild is the place to go. So how do we find out more about the conference and all that good stuff and find out more about the guild?
Great question. Again, it's www.alaskawritersguild.com. All of our conference information is on there. We also have a quarterly writing contest. Again, it's free if you're a member, which being a member just supports us as a nonprofit. It's only $35 a year. Again, we try to keep those costs low. If you're not a member, it's only $10 to enter our quarterly contest. The next contest that is coming up is poetry. And so if you are a poet, I would strongly encourage you to enter that. You can win $100. And furthermore, I think any win or honorable mention on any contest just looks great on that writing resume.
Absolutely. Well, that's awesome. So again, it's the annual conference of the Alaska Writers Guild. It's for writers and illustrators. I want to make sure we mention that as well. And it will take place Friday and Saturday, September 29th and 30th up in Anchorage. And you can find out more at alaskawritersguild.com/conference. Brooke Hartman, thank you so much for joining us via the Zoom and telling us a little bit about this conference. It sounds great.
Fabulous. Hey, thank you so much, Boston.
Absolutely. Gunnith Cheese for joining us today. We'll do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Have a terrific Thursday. On tomorrow's show, more First Friday goodness with artist Glow Ramirez and author Kevin Myers. And there's some community picnics happening in the next week as well from the Central Labor Council and NAMI Juneau. Plus, we'll hear a little bit about musk egg harvesting. Juneau Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, give us feedback, provide some ideas, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juneau Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks to all my guests today, and have a glorious Juneau evening.